Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th day of December, the very last Saturday of Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after, did you just reach puberty?
Yeah, and
at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues?
His underwear's on backwards.
Clearly. Here comes the news. In many ways, 2024, you got to have some sort of retrospective, right? In many ways, 2024 was one of the best years for smartphones in a long time. While you could pick out several other innovations made in years prior, 2024 marked an important year where phones debuted more eye-friendly displays, finally adopted years of promised software updates, got overheating under control, mostly, and moved toward more consumer-friendly practices like better repairability. But it's quite possible that 2025 is not going to be quite so good. Patent disputes between Samsung and Beijing Orient Electronics, or BOE, are heating up, threatening to get BOE displays banned here in the States. That's particularly concerning because Samsung AMOLED panels typically use PWM dimming, which gives many people headaches and makes it impossible to use those displays long-term, while BOE panels are far more eye-friendly. Smartphones in North America, particularly in the U.S., are mainly bought through someone's carrier of choice. Because of that, U.S. customers mainly buy from four brands: Apple, Samsung, Google, and Motorola. Speaking of Samsung, great segue. According to a report out of Korea, Samsung is cutting down significantly on its plans for 2025 Galaxy foldables, as it reflects on the Galaxy Z Fold 6 and Flip 6, which ultimately failed to meet expectations. Since the initial launch of its foldables, Samsung has been ramping up production numbers with each new generation. The company continued planning to sell more and more of its new devices each year, and it was working for a while. However, under increased competition from other brands, Samsung started to slip, and the Galaxy Z Fold 6 and Flip 6 were reportedly the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. Samsung is reportedly planning to cut production plans for the Galaxy Z Fold 7 and Flip 7. Samsung reportedly isn't alone in lowering its foldable forecast for 2025. Other foldable brands in China are also trimming down their plans. Meanwhile, rumor has it that Apple's working on a foldable iPhone, but we here at Soundbites tend to take rumors with a very large grain of salt. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is: would you buy a foldable phone? Your choices are: I already own one and love it. I already own one and tolerate it. I already own one and hate it. I'm thinking of buying one. I might get a regular phone. No new phone for me this coming year. And wait, you can fold phones again? Yes!
Only once.
Many of them only once. You can fold any phone. So far we have 20 votes, and no new phone for me this coming year is the top choice, and that goes along with the national and even international trends. So well done, Rochester, and everybody else in the country who's voting in the poll. And if you're not voting in the poll, why not? It's real easy. Just go to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And cast your vote. Takes less than 30 seconds, unless you're on an incredibly slow internet connection. And then you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. You know, there are a lot of people who have to have the latest and greatest. They cannot live without the newest phone.
Yeah.
And I get that. That's a choice. God bless you. You made it. Good for you.
And companies have trade-up plans just for them.
And they have trade-up plans just for them.
You never stop paying. You just get the new phone every year.
Right, exactly. And that's great if that's your thing. But a lot of people are quote unquote limping along with like last year's model. Gasp. I am. So you find that, you know, generally speaking, every phone does pretty much the same thing.
And they've kind of plateaued.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. One may do it a little faster. One may do it a little cuter.
An extra camera in.
Yeah. A camera may be a little better, not that you take any pictures.
That's why they had to start adding more cameras, because the one that's in there is really, really good. And now all the latest artificial intelligence AI models, you need more RAM, and you need a faster processor. So Google and Apple are both touting their new phones only support Apple Intelligence. Last year's phones don't.
Right. It's for Google, of course, it's Gemini. And they have to do something to get you to buy a new phone, because many people are quite happy with their current phone.
Yeah.
I get it. But I don't know how much more stuff they can cram into those things without making them a little bigger and a battery a little bigger.
Yes.
All right, to the phones. Our first call is Chuck from Rochester, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, gentlemen. Just for grins and giggles, my phone is a wired phone.
Wow. Wow, Chuck.
How long is your wire?
Retro, old school here.
Yep. You're not only old school, you're in a one-room schoolhouse.
Yep, with an outhouse out back. Okay. I woke up I won't say woke up, but I logged on to something strange this morning. You guys might know something about it. I use Opera browser, and when I fired it up, it no longer uses Launcher, if you're familiar with that, which allows you to create a profile and have different Opera configurations for different Opera profiles. They've now done away with that mechanism, and I better do something else, because I can't do that anymore. That's kind of what I'm hearing sniffs of on the internet.
Yeah, it's, well.
Yeah, okay.
It seems that, in fact, that little launcher application just doesn't work anymore.
Okay.
The browser itself now is that, it used to be that the launcher application was essentially your access point for a lot of stuff.
Right.
Now the browser itself is that access point. Just click on the Opera icon, and you don't need a separate program to initiate it.
But that only opens one program looking at one set of user data. You have no way to create multiple user profiles?
You should still be able to create multiple user profiles, sure.
But you can't use Launcher doing that.
Right.
Oh, okay. Would you use the same command line structure and just leave out the launcher thing? Or I need a little more research on that. You don't know for sure on that. What I used to set up is launcher dash user data profile and then the file path.
Right.
Or user data drive or something like that. That mechanism apparently doesn't work because of the launcher. If I just use Opera, it will now. I suppose I could try that. It's worth a shot. I'm trying to find out, is my ability to use multiple profiles gone permanently?
It looks like the short answer is no, but how you access them is different.
Yeah, okay.
And we're trying to find one that's dated recently enough to have.
I don't have Opera on this machine.
Okay.
But theoretically, you should just be able to, in the upper right corner is your picture.
In the upper right corner of what?
Of Opera.
Okay.
When you start Opera.
Yeah.
It you have a profile, and it's and your picture theoretically is in the upper right corner.
Well, the picture on the opened window of Opera, or the picture on the icon?
No, the open window.
Okay, the open window.
So in the upper right corner, near the upper right corner should be your picture, or maybe just blank because you never put in a picture.
But, yep, okay.
Okay. If you click on that, that gives you access to multiple profiles. And you should then be able to, one of the choices should be add new profile. Now, I'm winging it here because I don't have Opera on this machine.
Yeah, I just lost Opera, and I'm checking for updates.
Yeah, I see sign in.
Right, and somewhere under that should be add new profile or manage profiles.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that.
It might be after you click sign in, it asks you which profile you want to sign into.
Open, I have to have an Opera account or something funky like that.
Well, some sort of account, so a Gmail account. You can log into your Gmail profile, your Google profile.
Is it going to keep these up in the sky somewhere, or am I going to have them on my desktop?
I'm
not sure yet.
I'm not sure yet, but I believe you keep them on your desktop. They are. No, I take that back.
Well, you can optionally turn syncing on.
Right.
So it syncs your profile so you can see the same profile on other computers.
What I'm kind of hearing is they're trying to push everybody, trying to push it to the cloud if you're going to do this.
Well, if you have multiple devices.
Yeah.
And you want to maintain the same set of profiles on each device,
then
that's the way to do it.
Yeah, but I'm the other way. I have multiple devices, and I want different profiles on each machine, and on each machine I might have two or three other profiles.
Right.
I don't want anything up in the cloud.
I honestly don't know whether you can do that.
Sounds like I got to do a little more digging here.
I'm
not going to go on. Okay. Can I ask another question on something different or not?
Sure.
I have a couple machines hooked up to a router, wired into a router, and I picked up a used wireless printer that I want to set up. But when I try to implement that on the desktop, it kind of sounds like the desktop needs to be wireless in order to set up the wireless to the wireless printer.
No.
Sometimes.
The printer has a Wi-Fi setup, but it goes through that and it times out.
So there should be a there's two ways to do a Wi-Fi setup. One is to push the WPA button on your router.
Yep.
Never do that. WPA is insecure.
Okay.
The other way is usually called Wireless Setup Wizard, where it searches for Wi-Fi networks.
Okay, now would that be on my PC or
no, on the printer?
On the printer.
So
okay.
you must have a screen and control panel on the printer.
Right, it does. It's a one line screen. It's an older printer.
But it
goes through that, but then it says it times out.
Searching for your SSID.
Right.
Yes.
Are you hiding your SSID?
I couldn't tell you for sure right now. I'd have to check. That would be one of the options that it. Reason why I would time out?
Yep.
Yeah, because it can't find it.
Yeah, okay.
Oftentimes, printers do need to be temporarily connected USB to a PC in order to tell it what the wireless network is, because there's no control panel on the front with enough smarts to tell you. So once it finds your wireless network name, you're going to have to type your wireless password.
So it sounds like carry the printer over to the computer, plug it in, with a USB cable, do the setup from there, and then you can put the printer wherever you want.
Yep. If yours is old enough, then that would be the right way to do it.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's probably what I have to do. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, good luck.
Have a good day. Bye.
Yeah, typing Wi-Fi passwords without having a full keyboard on the printer is tricky.
Yeah.
Although, we did read, because you've mentioned that, too, trying to type your long passwords into your set-top box. Let me find it. Steve Gibson talked about a little thing you can get. It's a USB dongle that emulates a keyboard. So you plug it into your computer, tell it what giant string you want to type, and then you plug it into the other thing, and it acts as if it were a keyboard.
Oh, that's nice. That's a problem. I tend to make really long passwords. And for many of the devices that I have, you get a little thing that says, go to the web, this address,
mm-hmm.
find the code, type in the code. There's one service that we use that just says, type in your password. Well, my password is 64 characters long. I'm not going to do that with up, 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 left, 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 down, down, down. I just can't do that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Webster, New York. What's up, Roger?
I have two questions. I have a fairly new Samsung Galaxy with T-Mobile. is the Google Password Manager sufficient, or do I need to upgrade it to something better?
The Google Password Manager?
Yeah.
Well, Google doesn't have one, but Chrome does.
Okay, Chrome, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So, yes and no.
It depends.
It depends. So, with the Chrome Password Manager, you can elect passwords to stay on your device or be saved to the web.
Well, the advantage of saving it to the web is on your other devices using Chrome, you can access the same passwords.
I do that at the library.
No, you wouldn't want to do it at a public computer in the library.
You don't want to do it at a public machine because what Chrome also does is save the password on the machine.
Okay.
So you do not want to do that, but unless you're in like incognito mode. But,
and then clear the cache and delete
then
the program.
Clear the cache and go
and
into
they
the
probably,
program and
they might
check.
Not allow you to do that.
Right, yeah. Right. But in general, okay, when you create a password, it is saved in Chrome itself. It is saved on the device.
Yes.
And it is also encrypted and then saved in your Google Drive so that you can access it from other machines.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I just spoke the first time.
The biggest.
I'm not as smart as you guys.
Yeah. We have 100 years of combined experience that works up each other. The biggest danger of that, and the same thing with Apple's keychain and other password managers, it's only as good as your password that you use. So if someone gets into your Google account, they get all your Google passwords. If someone gets into your Apple account, they get all your Apple passwords. So you want to make sure that master password is really good, and don't have it save that anywhere.
Now I'm pretty weak in that.
So it doesn't have to be a complex password. Long is better than complex. Happy 34 monkey horse stapler.
Right.
Is a really good password and pretty easy to remember.
Right.
Gotcha.
Throw in some sort of. Symbol
Pearl,
in there,
Pearl
and you're done.
That I've got.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. What's your other question?
I'm with T-Mobile. I have their Scam Shield and McAfee for T-Mobile. Given that two-factor authentication is becoming pretty well accepted, and it looks like something you talked about last week about authenticators, which I was not aware of, that's going to be the new normal. That's my assumption.
Yes.
Given that, do I need to add or change to Avast and Malwarebytes, given that I've got Scam Shield and T-Mobile?
So here's the thing. These things do two different things. The authenticators mean that it's much more difficult for someone to pretend to be you when they're logging in, because they will not get the authenticator information, you will. So they can't, they won't have that number.
Okay.
But what ScanShield, McAfee, all of those do is prevent viruses and other malware on your phone, which is different from verifying your identity on the network.
Okay.
So they do two different things,
and you need to have them both,
right?
Well, I do, but do I need to add Avast or Mac or malware? Which the two things you guys push week after week.
No, ScanShield and McAfee are fine. If you've got them running and they're working, good. You're good.
Yeah,
right. Because I upped my protection with McAfee recently in the last couple of months. I was doing the free version, and now I'm not. I've got a little more. I've added to it.
Right.
I would probably use Malwarebytes in addition to McAfee, because McAfee is more for finding viruses, and Malwarebytes is more for finding other malicious software. There's a lot of malicious software that is
there's
not
more
a virus.
Of that, yeah, there's more of that than there are viruses.
Yeah.
Because the pirates have learned that they can make money by stealing your data. Creating a virus doesn't do squat for them.
And it takes a long time, and you got to be a pretty good programmer.
Yeah, and the thing of it is whereas if they just go into your machine or just create a little bot that goes in and steals some emails and all that, they can turn around and sell that list to spammers. So they're making money now.
Yep.
Whereas viruses didn't get them a dime.
Okay. So you recommend adding malware bytes, not replacing, but adding.
Yep.
Yep. So you would have Scam Shield to prevent scams, McAfee to prevent viruses, and malware bytes to get rid of any malware on your system.
All right, I appreciate the advice.
All right, thanks.
Checks in the mail. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. And he still uses mail. No, it's Chuck that had the wire phone. Yeah. Look, it's getting harder and harder to protect yourself on the network because the scammers are getting so much better.
Yep.
So much better. Products like Scam Shield will help. Google does an utterly amazing job of killing all the spam that comes into my Google accounts. I see very little, and the stuff I do see mostly gets flagged.
We used to say they block a billion messages a day. There's a new statistic out. They block 2 billion messages a day.
Billion with a B.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps getting worse because it is so inexpensive to create these scams. All you need is a body in front of a chair with a script.
And you hire a call center to do that.
Right.
And give them 30%.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Webster, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hold on.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Oh, lost him.
Chuck is gone.
Hold on a minute.
We've lost Chuck.
No, we got him here.
Okay, we got him here. Chuck. We just don't have him there.
Hello, Chuck?
Hello, Chuck.
All right,
somebody, please. That's the same password I have on my luggage?
Yeah.
Chuck? Okay, hold on.
We got Chuck. Chuck's coming.
On the way.
Chuck is on the way. Nope, no Chuck yet. All right, the anticipation mounts.
Yes. The wonderful school system that wasn't designed to have a call-in radio show.
Right. We have Chuck from Webster. We may not have Chuck from Webster.
Larry from Rochester.
We have Larry from Rochester instead? No, we do not. No, we do not.
Let's reset the phone system.
Well, in the meantime, I'd like to do a little dance for you all. It will be a river dance, so those of you watching on YouTube will not see my upper body move.
Soundbite.
But my legs are going insane right now. You wouldn't believe how good this river dance is. And for
we went to a big river dance somewhere, and they were talking about the history. And apparently it goes back to like some foreign occupation where they weren't allowed to dance. So if the enemy was looking in a window, couldn't see you dancing. So for your upper body up, couldn't move, but you're okay to dance with your feet.
Right.
So in protest, you dance with your feet.
Nice. All right, we're going to go to Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Well, good afternoon, guys, and Merry Christmas to all of you.
And to you, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, sir. I've got a question. I was just listening at your last caller. I used to have McAfee on all of my computers. I don't anymore. So I'll ask the question and listen offline. I have malware bytes and sound bytes. I have SOPOs and malware bytes on everything that I have right now, even my phone, and I don't know if it's necessary on a phone. But after listening to you and you describing what McAfee does, versus, say, Malwarebytes versus Sophos. How many of these things do you need on your machine?
You need one antivirus.
And Sophos is a good antivirus.
Is a good antivirus. You need one anti-malware.
And Malwarebytes is...
And Malwarebytes is the gold standard for that. And you need one scam blocker, which...
On a phone.
On a phone. And that's really all you need.
Larry, stay
on the line. We got to take a break. Stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Larry from Rochester, Newark, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the far too longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we still have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. You still there, Larry?
I'm still here.
Okay, what's up?
Well, you ended by saying that you need a spam blocker for your phone.
And most carriers include that for free. They used to charge extra for that, and I guess the FTC got nagging at them. Yeah, one reason to maybe not use McAfee is it's the big name. And so if someone's going to write a virus, they're going to make sure it can get past McAfee first. McAfee and Norton are the two big names.
Yep.
So it doesn't hurt to use a smaller named but still reputable antivirus company like Sophos or AVG or Avast.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in terms of those two things, yes, running an antivirus and an anti-malware product is important. But when it comes to, if you're talking about your phone, when it comes to anti-scam stuff, it depends entirely on your carrier and who your provider is for, say, email. Right?
Okay.
Well, and then you've got scam phone calls versus scam emails.
Right. So let's take each of those one at a time. In terms of scam emails, if you are using Google, they are insanely good at killing scam emails. Nobody's perfect, but they're insanely good. Apple is good, Microsoft is good, but Google is insanely good. So if you are using a Google address, a Gmail address, you're about as safe as you're going to get.
There is an interesting new scam going around. A couple of our customers have been hit by it. I've been hit by it. You get a message from PayPal saying there's an invoice waiting. It is a real message, really, from PayPal. The invoice is fake.
Right.
And you can usually tell because there's no description of what you bought, but it does say, if you suspect fraud, call this phone number, which is then fake and tricks you into more. Yeah.
So the biggest...
Rochester.rr.com mail account.
They are the worst. They do almost no blocking.
Right.
Everything in the world is all that now. However, on my Google account, which is what I use 99% of the time now, I never see anything like that.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of the older email companies, I remember AOL had a big problem with this, they would try to block the bad emails, and they would get too aggressive and would block something good and get sued. So then they stopped blocking and got sued.
Right. So use your Gmail address more often, your rr.com address less often.
Yeah, right. Use that for the junk email that you have to sign up for to, like, you know, look at a website to look what you wanted to buy.
Right.
Yeah. Well, RR.com now I basically don't use anymore because I just could not stop the stuff that came through, no matter what I did. And I think I called in a couple of months ago about that.
Yep.
Google is my go-to now, period.
Yeah. It should be.
I just don't get anything coming through other than what I want. Or someone sends me something that I'm just not interested in. But I don't get all this wild stuff that no matter how many times you try to block it, you can't.
Yeah. Right, right. So, yeah, check. Keep using your Gmail account. That's very good. But I'll tell you what, the number one scam-blocking device is your brain. You need to be smart about what you do and don't click on and what you do and don't believe. And that's the number one thing right there.
So then fundamentally, Sophos and Malwarebytes, which is on all of my machines here at the house, should be good enough.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Yes, they should.
Okay. It just piqued my interest when I listened at the last caller, and I said, I wonder if I should put McAfee back on the machine. I used to have it years ago. Right. And it still reminds me every now and then that your McAfee account is going bust. It's been bust for a long time now.
Yeah, right.
But it pops up, and same thing with Norton every now and then. But I'm happy with Sophos. I'm happy with Malwarebytes right now.
Then you should be fine.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Larry. Yeah, we talk about one or two. There are about 200 antivirus, anti-malware, anti-spyware,
and the big magazine,
whateverware.
The big magazines always do a shootout of what's the best one, and they're all about the same. Some of them are really bad, but you know the big names are all about the same.
Right. So we don't always mention all of them because this show is only 2 hours long. So, but you know, any one of the major ones would be fine, and you should be okay with that. All right. Our next caller is Chuck. From Webster, New York, the legendary Chuck.
We made it this time.
There you go.
Third time. Our discussion a little earlier about the Opera browser game.
Yeah.
And I did a little fool around after our discussion, and it, as it turns out, if you just remove the launcher from that command line when you set up the link.
Yeah.
It just goes Opera, and then you type in user data directory equals, and then the directory where you've got all your stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing.
Happy.
You manually make separate profile directories and then choose which one you want to open.
But you don't need launcher.
Yeah.
The launcher way in Opera does the same thing, and that's all you have to do is take that launcher name out of it.
Yeah.
So
the Chrome browser offers separate profiles built in. I wonder if they're going to add that to Opera. With a GUI interface to be able to switch between your profiles.
It would be nice if they did it the way Firefox does it.
Firefox too, yeah.
Yeah, and then you got a little, when you open it up, you got a little window that says choose the profile you want, and it's a real simple mechanism.
Right, right. Google does that too.
Yeah, okay.
So what you're saying is Launcher essentially did nothing.
That's what it sounds like.
Great.
That's why they took it off.
That's why they took it off.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it did something we don't know about. I mean,
behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. Thanks,
alrighty,
Chuck.
Thank you. Yep. Bye.
Bye. Bye. That's a good one. I like that one.
Well, and
I'd like to sell you a program that does nothing, but you just put it in there and it doesn't work.
And I'm wondering if he's only on a Linux version that uses the command line. Maybe if you right click on the Opera icon, it lets you pick which profile to use in a GUI.
Well, you can do command lines in Windows and Mac as well. I don't know if you knew that. Many people don't.
RM minus R. No.
Yeah. Exactly. No. No.
I saw this. Remove all the French from your computer. RM minus FR.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, there you go.
Don't do that.
Do not type that. You will end up with a blank machine.
The OS is so good it erases itself.
It will erase itself if you tell it to. It'll say, "Are you sure?"
Penfield.
Okay.
And then when you complain that it erased itself, it says, "Well, you said you were sure."
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Penfield, New York. What's up, Brian?
Well, I have a couple simple questions, I think. One is, I talked to you a while ago, and you recommended using uBlock with my Chrome system. And I got a message recently the other day about that extension being no longer available. And I'm not quite sure what that means. But I can't use uBlock effectively.
Yeah, all right. So let me back up a second for those who don't use uBlock. uBlock Origin is a program that basically blocks ads in your browser.
And a lot of other things.
And a lot of other things, but you know, let's just say ads because it's only a two-hour show. So what Google has done is, well, Google is very angry about that. Because they and everybody else, the only way they make money on the internet is through ads.
Google's an advertising company, first and foremost.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
So they are blocking uBlock Origin. They are making it so that will not work.
Manifest V3 is the
Manifest
way to go.
Manifest V3 is what they're doing, and, yep. And it doesn't work in Manifest V3. However, there is uBlock Origin Lite, which sort of works.
Gives you most of the common blocking, ad blocking stuff that you wanted.
Right. And there's also Brave and Vivaldi, which are also Chromium-based browsers, just like Chrome is. And you can, when you start them up, you can say, I want to import all of my data from my current Chrome setup, and it will bring in all your bookmarks and all your passwords and everything else. And run just like Chrome does, and it still, at least for now, does block many of those ads.
Okay. So what's the name again of that program?
Either the program that's replacing uBlock Origin is uBlock Origin Lite. And of course Lite. It's spelled LITE.
Right. Okay.
Or you can switch to a different browser that uBlock Origin still works on, like Firefox or Brave.
Right.
Okay. I think I'll try uBlock Lite and see how that works.
Right.
The original was really effective. It was really great.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. How about something like AdGuard? Or will they run into the same sort of problems that uBlock Origin has?
Google is aggressively killing ad blockers.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll give it a try.
Yep.
One other quick question. I put a Dashlane on my computer as well, and I'm using the pass keys and going through right now and setting up pretty much all of the things that I, you know, need or use passwords for. You know, when I'm on the internet with Dashlane, it strikes me as a really nice program. It seems to be working pretty well so far. But they also have the option in Dashlane to activate a Hotspot Shield VPN. Is that something I want to go ahead and do? Sometimes I do, but I really don't take the computer out of the house very often. I have a Chromebook.
So. I am, generally speaking, not a fan of VPNs.
Okay.
In most cases, VPNs don't do anything that people think they do.
Okay.
What they were originally intended for was for a company would set up their own VPN, and then if you worked remotely, it was like you were sitting at your desk. You were inside their network.
Right, we had one before I retired. Yeah.
Right. VPNs nowadays are designed to hide you.
Hide your location.
Your location on the internet, and that's really all they do. Remember, your data are, for the most part, and you obviously should check this every time you go to a website, but your data are, for the most part, encrypted between you and the other end already.
Right.
When you use a VPN, you're encrypted to the VPN, and then unencrypted, and then re-encrypted to to that other end. So anybody at the VPN can read your data.
Right, right.
So what they're trying the one thing they do is they hide your location from the other end. So you can say, sign into a VPN in England and run BBC iPlayer and watch BBC shows that you're not supposed to when you're not in England. But what it does do is it blocks a lot of the data that your ISP gathers about you and sells about you. But then the VPN company gets all that to sell about you.
Right.
Right. You're just changing who sells it.
Right. And one of the objectives here is for, you know, me obviously to keep as much as of my information from other people as I can. I'm as tired of spam and all of that as anybody else here. And in that step where the transmission is unencrypted in the chain that you talked about is probably something I want to avoid if I can.
Right.
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 Now, if you've got a site on the internet where you can run your own VPN, now you're talking. But that aside, VPNs only change who gets to look at your data.
Okay. Really? So they change who they spread it around to, is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't want it really shared with anybody.
Exactly.
Unless we deliberately choose to do that. So
right.
Okay. Thank you. You've answered my questions well. The only thing I'm disappointed in is I hope this UB Block Origin Light will work, because it's been great not having to deal with the ads.
Oh, please. I was watching a YouTube video the other day on a machine that wasn't mine. It made me crazy. Yeah. It made me more insane than I normally am. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. Well, not in my case anyway.
Yeah.
I think I could be insane. But, it is clearly maddening. And So, okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Hope you had a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well. Thanks, Brian.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, I was watching this thing, and there were ads before it, and it broke up in the middle and had ads, and then there were ads at the end.
And
what?
And they seem to be adding more ads.
And it's more ads, and none of the ads were relevant.
Right. I want to watch a 3-minute video, and there's 17 minutes of ads.
Yes. It's ridiculous. And I get it. I do get it. That's how they make money.
Well,
and that's how the people share the money. I don't think we have enough viewers to be monetized.
No.
But if we were, then, you know, every time one of our videos ran on YouTube, we would get a couple of pennies.
Mm-hmm.
Great. But it makes me crazy, particularly because you don't know what ads are coming up.
Yeah.
And you have no say over them.
Mm-mm.
So we do this show and we say, maybe you don't want to use this product. It's not great. And then you see an ad for that product and they say it's great.
Because you mentioned it.
Yeah.
Possibly because we mentioned
it.
And so now it sounds like we endorsed that product.
Mm-hmm. The extra
we did not.
The extra irony is that half of the ads I see on YouTube are for YouTube Premium to block the ads.
Yeah.
But most all of the streaming services have started doing this now. They're raising their prices. And so the cheapest tier is almost always now with ads. You can pay a little more to get fewer at nice catch. You can pay a little more to get fewer ads,
right.
But you almost can't. They almost never have a no ad tier.
Right,
right. No, that's why I've gotten to where now I like to record a lot of stuff, and then that way go through and fast forward through a lot of the stuff.
Yep. Because absolutely. Unfortunately, YouTube TV doesn't let you fast forward through the commercials.
Mm.
It's the only thing I don't like about it. On the other hand,
sometimes
gives me
they
time
have
to
that,
go get a drink.
Yeah, sometimes they have the skip the commercial and just watch the Zen.
Right. but yeah, there's just, it really does, I understand it. I absolutely understand it. People, since the internet was introduced, people 40 years ago, 40 years ago, people have been trying to figure out a way to make money off the internet. The only thing that they've come up with that consistently works is ads.
And that goes back to radio and before that newspapers and before that billboards.
Now, the other model is subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I have a subscription-based newsletter that I put out every week. It does not make a lot of money. If I were to put ads in it, I would make more money.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not doing that. But, you know, the big thing is ads. And there's this dichotomy. People don't want to see ads. Companies want to show you ads.
And you don't want to pay more to get not ads.
And you don't want to pay more to get not ads. So that's where this new multi-tier thing is coming along there. And in Chrome, as Steve said, Google is an ad revenue based company.
Mm-hmm.
They are blocking the add-ons that block the ads. So, you know, many of us, look, Brave and Vivaldi are two other browsers also based on Chromium. So they're very, very similar to Chrome. They look just a tiny bit different. But they also block ads by themselves. So in many cases, you don't see a lot of those ads. And I haven't tried YouTube on Vivaldi or Brave yet. I will do that. We'll see. Your intrepid reporter will tell you what he ends up with. But I've been using both Brave and Vivaldi off and on. Haven't landed on one as my choice yet. But both are fast. Both work very, very, very much like Chrome. It doesn't seem that you can see a lot of difference. And I know that people don't like change. Change, bad. So,
dollar's good.
Dollar good, change bad. So if you're thinking of moving from Chrome, then, yes, you can move to Firefox, which is also pretty familiar to a lot of people. You can move to Edge, which is a very bad idea. Or you could move to Vivaldi or Brave, either of which, so far to me, look a whole lot like Chrome and work much the same way.
Yep.
So, and they still, you know, both of them, when you start them up, the first thing they do is brag about how many ads they blocked. On the homepage, on the blank screen page. There are alternatives out there to the three major browsers you know about: Chrome, Edge, and Firefox.
Most contacted
and tracker. Safari.
Yeah, the most contacted tracker on my Safari is GoogleTagManager.com.
Yep. Yep.
One side note: one thing that I ran into this week. I've been working with this one gentleman.
You've got to learn to drive.
I know. About his program. And I'm not going to mention the name of the program, but I was running into problems with it because, as you know, I like NPass, and I like big passwords.
Yes.
Well, I sent him off an email, and I says, well, I'm having trouble setting up the email and that, you know, or the password and that. He comes back to me. Well, we only allow 8 to 15 character passwords. I said, you got to be kidding. I said, what planet do you live on? Well, I said, those passwords in your database are going to get breached so fast, you need to expand that to at least 64 characters. I thought his head was going to explode from what I heard on the phone. He goes, no, I said, it's not that big of a deal to program.
Right.
And you need to have bigger passwords. Because he's trying, well, I'm trying to make it simple for these folks. I said, well, you're not going to do them any favor once they put all their information in there and then it gets breached.
If you have a password field that's up to 64 characters, you can still put in an 8-character password.
Yeah.
If people want to be unsecure, that's on them. But that's don't me, let it be on you.
It was like Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck are the only characters I know. I don't think I know eight characters.
Well, there's seven dwarves. Yeah. And Snow White.
I don't know their names.
Happy, Grumpy, Sleepy, Sleazy. Sleazy. Happy, Grumpy, Sleepy, Sneezy, Dopey, Doc, and Bashful. Happy, Grumpy, Sleepy, Sneezy, Dopey, Doc, and Bashful. All right. I'm going to go lie down now.
You need to.
In the meantime, we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot. And it's not the Rumball edition. The first hour is done. It's in the books, but we've got a whole nother hour of sound bites coming your way. That's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Please give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. I'll try to figure out what I did to my mouth that it won't talk today. And we will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your support, we continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm enjoying the sunshine.
That's the way to do it.
You talked about authenticators.
Right.
And I use NPass. And NPass is supposed to be able to work as an authenticator. And I'm trying to follow their instructions on the web, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't want to change something that's working. I don't want to mess with something, but it says to add the secret code into that field. Well, I don't get that secret code until I either open the app or go online.
Well, yeah, when you go online to a website you want to use an authenticator with, in there'll be a box that says use authenticator or use passkey, and then it will show you a QR code, and that's the code you scan.
Oh, I have to scan that?
Right.
You print it and type it in, all 128 bits of it.
Right.
The only authenticator I have any familiarity with, and that was a while ago, one place I worked some years ago, used the Microsoft Authenticator. They used Microsoft everything, which
sure.
I thought we went. And then the tech guy was the guy that set it all up. All I had to do was put in this absolutely lame, short password.
But it changed every minute. That's why it made it secure.
Right. So here's the deal. You can use Microsoft or Google or any one of the Facebook, any one of the authenticators.
Uh-huh.
And what it does is it creates a unique password, which changes every minute.
Okay.
So when you say to a website, oh, I want to use the Google Authenticator, or what? Well, what you do is you get a QR code that you scan in, and that sets up the timer.
Okay.
Right. So now when you go to use that authenticator, it knows, and it doesn't matter which authenticator it is, but it'll tell you. You go in and you say, all right, I'm using the Google Authenticator. Let me look there. Oh, it's 214375. You have a minute at most. Type in 217345.
So, okay. So if the timer's at 50 seconds, wait till the next minute so you can get
it in. That's happened
time.
To me. I was in the middle of typing a pen, and I'm a touch typist. Ah. So I was looking at it as I was typing it into my keypad, and it changed in the middle of my typing it in. So I had to backspace out and change and type in the new one. And that's what makes it secure. In general, by the time somebody steals it and uses it, it's changed.
See that, and so that was the in the very early days, there was a team that was recommending secure practices when they were just creating passwords in the first place. And so the guy that recommended hiding the password as you type it has officially apologized to the internet. They figured the biggest threat would be someone looking over your shoulder watching you type your password, which is a threat. But the bigger threat is you mistyping it yourself. That's why so many now password fields have a little eyeball where you can see what you're typing. The other recommendation they gave is you change your password every 90 days in case someone got your password. Well, what if they got it? What if they got it 89 days ago?
Right.
Well, then you should change your password every day. What if they got it this morning? Well, then you should change your password every minute, and that's what authenticators are.
Yeah.
You get a new password every minute.
Okay, so my one of my banks I'm looking at it's got the one-time passcode that it sends you over the phone.
Right.
It has no other option.
Then that's the option you should use.
That's the only option I can use.
It's right. Not a great option, but it's a good option.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
The app on my phone, I can use my fingerprint.
Right, which is very good.
But I don't see an option on that. So not all of them have the option to authenticate.
No, authentication is fairly new.
It's gaining ground.
Fairly new. So not everybody does it, and it is not as easy as it sounds to implement. A lot of places have done so.
It took a decade for people to get used to text code authentication.
Right.
I'm going to send you a one-time code now. So I figure another 10 or 15 years and passkeys will be common.
Mm-hmm.
So on my phone, my phone will copy I get a drop down.
Yep.
And the phone will copy that number, and then I just if I put the cursor in the box at the top of the keypad at the bottom of the screen shows the number, and I just select that number and put that number in.
Right.
So it's pretty simple. One of the things, at least with this particular bank, is if I were to have to look at a different screen, it goes right back to the home page.
Oh,
so
nice.
If I don't work with, like right now, I have to log in online because the passcode is sent by phone. I have to have two devices to be able to log into the bank.
Wow.
On the web page.
And that's by intent, so that if someone gets your password, they can't just log in without having your phone also. It's becoming a second factor.
Mm-hmm.
And a second factor can be a one-time code, or now moving into what's being named passkeys, it's an auto-generated code every minute.
But in your case, the steps you should follow is first you go into EnPass, copy the password to your bank, then go to your bank and type that password in. And then when you get the one-time code, that should be a drop down at the top of your screen where you can click copy the number
and then paste it in.
And that way you don't have to leave that main page.
Yeah. I know Apple does it where if you're using Apple Messages, it reads the code that just came in and pastes it into Apple Safari.
Well, usually in EnPass, though, when you go to a particular website and click on, say, filling in the username, you click on it, usually there's a little window that opens up and says, you know, if NPAS is running down on your desktop, do you want to use this? And it'll auto-fill that in.
Yeah, that's a feature you can turn on, yes.
Yeah.
I can auto-fill the username and password,
mm-hmm.
but then I still have to have my phone for the passcode.
Right. Right. Yep, yep.
Yep. Now, and a lot of the password managers don't turn autofill on by default because there was a hack where a maliciously crafted website, so you get tricked into going to a malicious website, off the screen where you can't see it is a username and password field. So when you click on the on the name field that you see and your password manager autofills your name, it sees that username and password down there off on the side and fills that in too. So most of the password managers are making sure that they're not getting tricked by that anymore. But some of them do that by not autofilling every box. They just only fill the one box you're in.
Oh, okay. Well, NPAS will fill them, but I have to select to use it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it generally recognizes the account that I'm linked with.
Mm-hmm.
So the URL would be fed back to NPAS, and then NPAS then will give me the right password.
Right.
But if it was a malicious cover, it should NPAS should recognize that's not the page that you want to link to that.
Right, exactly right. That's the whole point of NPAS.
Okay. So that works. Like I say, it's just a matter of trying to add this authenticator for when it comes about. There are in the audit it'll show which ones are available for two
right.
factor.
The basic point here is pick an authenticator and use it now
when the site allows it. Not right. all sites use authentication yet.
Well, and the sites that do. For example, Microsoft gets really porky if you try to use a not Microsoft authenticator.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have multiple authenticators on your phone.
Ah, gotcha.
But that's not something you can.
It doesn't matter.
I've got three of them on my phone right now, and they all work fine. They don't interfere with each other.
I had a customer that absolutely refused to use the authenticator on his phone. He wanted to use it on his computer. So no, it doesn't work that way. So he switched service providers, so he didn't have to use Microsoft Authenticator.
But that's basically the idea. You pick an authenticator. You can use it for most things. Some things will insist on a different authenticator. Who cares? Use that one then. For that,
okay.
It's just protecting you, anyways. This is the bottom line.
I don't have but two pieces of software that are Microsoft anything.
That's good.
Good for you.
They're all in my work, and that's the only time I have those, and none of that needs an authenticator.
Right.
But I'm just trying to figure out how to set up an authenticator with NPAS, and I'm not seeing a real good option here to...
Okay, so...
It starts with the website you go to where you say, I want to use authenticator.
Okay, so...
And NPAS calls them time-based one-time codes, or TOTP.
Okay, I see the one-time codes.
No, there's multiple types of one-time codes. There's the regular one-time codes that are general to FA, two-factor authentication. There's time-based... one-time codes. Those are the authenticator apps we're talking about.
And I just posted a link to NPAS's introduction to passkeys and how to use passkeys. So passkeys is now the trade name that the industry has decided for the time-based one-time passcode authentication.
Okay.
And so they have a primer on how to use passkeys in NPAS.
Okay. I was looking at some general instructions on setting that up, and it didn't really give me any that I could figure out. I don't know. I've been just
Well, take maybe a look at what Steve posted, and if you still have a problem.
Yeah, we got it.
We kind of got to move on a little bit.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And it all starts at the other end. I log into someone's Google account, and Google says, hey, you want to use a passkey with your biometrics? No, this is not my account. I'm doing it with a customer sitting right here.
Right.
Or the one time we accidentally did, I was logging into their account on my device because theirs didn't work, and it automatically picked my Google passkey. No, don't do that either.
Right.
They assume that you only have one account and one device, and you're using them.
Right. But like I said, you can have multiple authenticators on your machine at the same time. I have three of them so far. And while I try to use one, sometimes it comes back and says, no, we want you to use ours. Poo-poo on the others. Poo-poo. All right, our next caller is Scott from Webster, New York. What's up, Scott?
Hi, guys. I am considering, I have two New Year's resolutions. One of them is to dabble with the Pi, and the other one is to get involved and try out this Microsoft Flight Simulator. Can I combine the two resolutions? Can I get a Strawberry Pi and a Microsoft Flight Regulator so I can have sort of a dedicated machine for that? I don't want to buy a whole new machine, with all the various requirements that they're recommending for that software, that gaming software. I'm not a gamer. I just would love to try and play with this flight simulator.
Yeah, you'd have to buy a Pi that can run Windows and that has enough RAM and storage and graphics capability for Flight Simulator. Flight Simulator is really heavy on graphics because it wants to do photorealistic airplanes. I keep seeing these. I really hate it when someone posts a Flight Simulator picture, a video, into one of the airplane forums. Because, no, that's a Flight Simulator. That's not a real airplane.
Okay.
So you end up buying a rather beefy Pi in order to play a Windows game, even though it's not really a game. It's more than a game because it's photorealistic simulation.
Yeah.
And there are people that run Microsoft Flight Simulator. They have full cockpit setups and joysticks and throttles and screens. And then there are other people that play air traffic control. I can see being a pilot and flying your plane around.
Oh.
But I can't quite see playing an air traffic controller.
No, that would be...
Even if I was one, I wouldn't want to go home and be one,
really?
Too.
I don't know. It sounds like to get involved. I'm never been a gamer, but to get involved in Flight Simulator might be more beyond my pay grade.
There are several free flight simulators. Let me find my list of them. If you don't want the super simulation, you don't want the real, JetBlue Boeing 737 aircraft really landing in the Rochester airport. So there are other programs, one called XFly. That does that, yeah.
Okay.
Let me get
so
my list.
There's also one called Flight Gear.
Okay.
Flight Gear, that's another good one, yeah.
Which can be run on the Raspberry Pi. I would suggest the 400 or the 500.
Pi.
Preferably the 500. It gives you the most RAM.
Okay.
The most speed on the processor. And a decent graphics. You may not get the best graphics, but certainly it will be good graphics.
Yeah, no, that's all I'm looking for. I'm not going to build a cockpit in my office for all that. My wife thinks I'm nuts. Anyways, that would be even crazier. All right, that's very helpful. I appreciate it. One other quick question. All these crazy things that are going on our highways today, someone suggested to me, well, you should get a dash cam. Do you guys dabble with dash cams? Is that appropriate for the show? Or
we haven't talked about it much, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah, my son got me one for my rockets and my airplanes.
Oh.
But I use it more now as a dash cam than I do on
yeah, it's...
Well, he got me one of the big square ones, typically called an action cam.
Yeah.
GoPro is one of the big brands that are well known.
Right.
They're not very aerodynamic, so it didn't work very well as a flight cam.
Oh.
But it works pretty good as a dash cam. The one I got is a little annoying because it only takes a 64-gig card and it fills up in a week or two.
Right. So, okay. So a couple... Well, you can overwrite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? You can set it up so that only keeps a week's worth of data.
But I want to keep all of them. And so, going back and
that's
watching.
On you.
Yeah that's so, too much free time.
So you might get hundreds of hours of video before anything interesting happens. One.
But the thing of it is, though, it's maybe mainly for an insurance purposes.
Yes, exactly.
Because, you're seeing more and more of the scams going on where people are doing brake checking and trying to pull off insurance scams saying that you ran into them and all this other stuff. So, it's kind of fun to watch some of them that when they tried to pull that and the guy goes, oh, I got a dash cam. They can't get out of there fast enough.
And right. Yeah, that's what I've heard too, Bob. So that would be my purpose for
It's becoming very popular. Matter of fact, they've got some that'll mount up on top of the mirror so you really don't see them. They're not, getting in your way on the dash, so it's not obscured your view of, what's in front of you and that.
Yeah, they're not a bad thing to have these days. I've been toying with that idea myself. The big thing is so they plug into what is now called the accessory port and used to be called
the cigarette
lighter.
Yeah, right.
So the question becomes, what else do you use that port for?
Yeah.
So you now have to think about what the power end of the dash cam looks like, and can you share it with whatever other devices you want plugged in there?
Well, some of them I've seen, because mine doesn't come with a cigarette lighter port. I mean, it's got a USB.
Right. So, but my point is, you got to pay attention to that end too.
Right. Well, what I'm
whatever you decide to get.
What I was getting at though, they're starting to come out with mirrors now that they're running a wire up there with a couple USB ports, so you don't have wires hanging down from your mirror on down to your dash and getting in your way. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can get a replacement mirror that has a camera built into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And there's even packages where you have a front camera and a back camera.
Yeah. My friend, who's an electrician, told me what he did. He just ran the wire underneath the molding or whatever along the windshield, and he actually put it into his fuse box. He said you can split off one of those fuses and you can hardwire it right into the.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah,
I can't. I don't know. I might have him do it for me.
Wait, exactly. Yeah.
It sounds pretty easy, but
if so, send him my email address.
it always sounds easy.
Yeah, it sounds. Well, good. And probably the more you spend, the more bells and whistles, or maybe you probably are getting a better storage.
The big thing is the quality of the image.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A $50 camera is going to give you a fairly blurry image.
Right.
A $200 camera, you'll be able to read the license plate. A $300 camera, you'll be able to read the license plate in low light.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. If it happened at night, if someone brake check you at night, you want to be able to
right. So that pay attention to that. So it's three things: how it mounts,
yep,
how it gets power, and the quality of the image.
Perfect. All right.
And a fourth thing, because nobody expects a Spanish Inquisition, how much storage you get, because Steve is going to keep every inch of his road trips.
Yep.
Oh, that's got to be pretty boring.
And most of them have SD cards. Yeah, so you want to make sure that, how big of an SD card it can take.
Yeah, okay.
So I have a 4K camera, and that filled up in like 2 days.
Yeah.
So I cut it back to 1080p, and so now it's a week.
Oh, so you can actually adjust the resolution.
Depends on the camera.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Okay. Wonderful. That's very helpful. Thank you, Dash Cams. Got it.
There you go. Have fun, Scott.
All right, guys. See ya.
And there's some great YouTube channels for viewing dash cams. Especially in Russia, where apparently insurance fraud and just scaring someone to pay me right there is rampant.
Big, yeah.
The one cool one that I saw, these kids were going up this ramp, and there's a semi behind them, and they thought they were going to hijack the truck. So they get out of their car. Two of the kids out of the backseat get out of their car. They're coming at the guy. He just drops it in gear, pushes the car right out. Now, and they're going spastic, jumping out of the way because their car is getting demolished. The car goes off to the side as the semi goes right on by.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Dash cams are I don't want to say essential, Okay, so I was at a stoplight, and there was an accident right in front of me a couple of weeks ago. Had I had a dash cam, I could have just given that SD card to the officer. SD cards are cheap. Here, take it. I don't, you know, keep it. Okay, as it was, I had to be an eyewitness, and that's notoriously unreliable.
Yeah, I've seen some interesting experiments they've done where they'll be in a classroom, they'll stage an attack.
Yep.
Someone runs in, grabs a person, runs out again. And then they stage people saying, give me a description of the perpetrator. Well, he was a short, fat, white guy. And then someone feeds the audience, no, it was a tall, skinny, black guy. And suddenly the people that were really there and really saw the short, fat, white guy are convinced it was a tall, skinny, black guy.
Yep.
Because that's what the crowd is saying, so I must be wrong in my memory.
Yep. And you know, I told the officers what I saw, but I was pretty accurate. Yeah. But the reality is the dash cam would have seen so much more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they could go back over and look at it again and again and again.
And for insurance purposes.
Exactly.
That's where this is where the dash cams are becoming more and more popular because of the fraud that's going on. And if you've got proof with the dash cam, a lot of cases are just getting thrown out because, you know, the dash cam is, you know,
it's in this particular case, it was who was at fault. Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't a scam. It was a real accident.
Yep.
Who was at fault? Well, I could say who I thought was at fault, but a dash cam would have been objective. Right. This light is green. That light is red. This guy ran it. The other guy hit it. Perfect. Done.
Yeah.
I don't have to.
It doesn't leave any question.
No question.
Have you noticed how a lot of lights are now red both ways for a second or two to stop people from pushing that red light?
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. If you're on the phone, please stay on the phone. If you're not on the phone, why not? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 from anywhere else in the entire world. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have Fred back on the line from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, guys. I wanted to throw something out there for the guy that was talking about the camera.
Yep.
I commute by bike. I have a GoPro Hero 12. I love it. Absolutely clear pictures. I have a 1 terabyte SD card, micro SD card, and it captures about 8 hours of recording, and the app that's on my phone works really well if I want to just, so if I've got a really long thing and all I want to do is send somebody a clip, I can edit from my phone. I can edit I can edit that file. I haven't found a good way to do it on my desktop or on my laptop, either Linux or Microsoft, but that's a whole other question. But I did want to say there's a battery pack that you can get to add life to the battery. But yeah, you can. I swear by that thing. It's crystal clear pictures. It's like you're looking at high res television. When I play it back on my desktop, either Linux or the Microsoft, and it I have a 27 inch screen, and it looks like I'm right there, and it's got pretty decent vibration eliminating, what was the term I'm looking for, it suppresses bounce.
Oh, yeah, so Steadicam.
Stabilization, yeah.
I know I'm running over a bump and I can hear it, but the camera looks dead steady. You know, like some of them, if I was to take it with my phone, try to do that, it'd be horrific and it'd be hard to watch.
Right.
Yeah, the GoPros are kind of the high-end gold standard of the market. I got an Apex cam for $40 that does everything it does, except it only has a 64-gig storage.
Right,
you're not going to get it for the same price as the Apex, that's for certain.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got all the equipment to mount the whatever. The extra battery wouldn't work for you, Steve, because it's heavy.
Well, I got it wired into my car through the cigarette lighter. Yeah. So,
if you were trying to put it on the plane or in the plane, you could probably build it into the plane.
A 5-minute flight.
So you need to add extra horsepower for carrying it.
Yeah, I tried clipping it onto one wing at the root of the fuselage, and it just made the plane so unstable it couldn't. So then on another plane, a low wing plane, I was able to put a bolt through the bottom of the fuselage, and with a camera mount, put it on the bottom, and that worked pretty good. Except I had it pointed straight forward. So most of the time, it just sees the sky. So, I got to point it down a little bit so it can see the ground.
Yeah, that takes some experimenting. Even the simple thing is putting it on my bike. It took some experimenting. But the good side is with the GoPro is you have a screen you can view live.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, GoPro is really marketing themselves to like the creator community on YouTube.
Right. And that's another thing you want to be careful of. Is if you're using it as a dash cam, where you put it in your car for
stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah.
For
viewing.
Power, viewing?
No, for getting...
blocking?
Oh, yeah. Recording, whatever you're recording is...
Never mind, doesn't matter. I've lost the word. I've completely lost the word.
Yeah, you got two things that you're working against. Is the camera blocking your view, and is the camera catching your view? So.
Right, the shine on the windshield. What do you call that?
Glare.
The reflection. The glare. Thank you. The glare.
Yeah.
You got to be aware of that and how that's going to affect what you're seeing. So having a dash cam with a camera, with a screen on the back, or with an app on your phone, is really the way to go.
That could be double bad for you.
Yeah.
Glare.
Because the glare would come off my head.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And bounce back and forth between you.
You're always saying that. That's...
Shut up and more on the board. That's all I'm saying to you.
I just want to try that guy. Prepare to, you know, buy the expensive one, you know, and you get what you pay for, kind of.
Right, exactly.
Or you can go both ways. I buy the cheap one first, see if that's what you like, then get the expensive one.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I knew that that's what I wanted, but the only thing that I, at least for commuting by bike, I need one that's front and rear facing.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other story.
A lot of cyclists will either put it on their helmet, but then it looks at what you're looking at, or I've seen them with a post sticking up out of the back of their seat. And the stupid cameras will edit the post out of the video themselves. So it looks like the camera is just floating above. There are quadcopters that do that, camera quads that will follow you, flying behind you to get, you know, cool action shots as you ride your bike.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of that. I just clipped it on the front and
off you go.
The unfortunate thing is RPD doesn't care. I tried to show them somebody that smacked me, and they didn't want to even look at it.
Huh.
Well, you go to the insurance company and then see what the damage is. If it becomes more than a misdemeanor, then they might care.
Yeah, well, right. True, but...
Well, insurance purposes as far as putting the claim to get the bike repaired.
Yeah, it wasn't that much that I would... So, I don't have insurance on my bike. I don't know anybody that will insure my bike. I get a lot of ads for a lot of advertising for a car, that type. But I don't know anybody that'll do that, but I have to catch the guy in order to file a claim against his insurance.
Right.
I got smacked a month and a half ago, and RPD has not done the report yet.
So
I can't claim anything until I have a report and I know who the insurance company is and all that good stuff. Because I don't have the capability of tracing a license plate.
Right. And that's one of the reasons we talked about how you need a decent resolution on your camera so that you can read the license plate.
Yep. Yeah. The only thing that that is difficult with New York State, well, probably all license plates, is if you're running with a light, the glare coming back from the license plate.
Right. At night.
Is difficult, you know, at the degree of difficulty to reading it.
Yep, I completely understand.
Yep. All right, I just wanted to throw that out there for you.
All right, thanks, Fred.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, if you're going to get a dash cam, there's a lot more to it than what's the smallest one with the biggest storage. You've got a lot of considerations, and in particular, you know, from my way of thinking, the resolution of the camera is super important. And I don't mean just is it 1080p or 4K or any of that stuff, but how well does it work in daylight? Can I read other people's license plates? And how well does it work at night? Can I read other people's license plates? So that's more, to me, that's a lot more.
And how often do you have to charge it?
Well, it plugs into the lighter, so you never charge it. It runs right off the battery of your car.
On some of them.
Well, on the ones that I would want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, in terms of, and for bikes, you can get ones with a little generator.
Mm-hmm.
You stick that on a wheel and you're on your way. But yeah, so if you're gonna look at dash cams, everybody, you know, your mileage may vary, right? But from my point of view, you want, how good is the quality of the video at night? How good is the quality of the video during the day? And how much, and to Steve's point, how much data can you get on a card?
Yeah.
And then how many other devices can you plug in to your lighter simultaneously? Because if you have, you know, if you've got some sort of, two or three things you want to plug in, and it only takes one, you've got to make some decisions.
Well, the thing of it is, though, is, if they're USB, I know you can get these adapters that go into the cigarette lighter.
Yes.
And then they break out, and they've got actual plugs in them, and they also have for the 12 volts, and then also ports for USB.
Right. The one that I have... is three. I have three USB ports, three USB A ports.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing.
Yeah, A or B.
Is it A or C? And what are you doing? I have one with three USB A ports, and I'm only using one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be fine with a USB connected dash cam. But you have to be aware of all of these things and think of them ahead of time.
When you're setting out your plan to do all of this.
And now is probably pretty dang good time to buy a dash cam.
Yeah.
Post-Christmas.
Yeah. So bet you some good sales on them.
Yeah, exactly. I did some research.
Or returns, and they didn't erase the SD card.
There you go. I did some research before Christmas. And there was a $170 model that was really fairly nice. I may go back and look at that one again. But there, you know, the other thing is what price range can you afford?
Yeah, because you get what you pay for.
Right, and you pay for what you get.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you look at the $50 dash cams or the $70 dash cams versus the $300 dash cams, you're in a whole other level there.
Yeah.
So. You can, I suppose, if, I don't know what you would connect it to, but, you know, it's basically the same as the cameras you put on your computer. It's just got storage attached to it.
Mm-hmm. And a battery.
Maybe a battery.
Maybe a battery, yeah, or maybe plug it in.
Right. So, yeah, those are, you know, in your case, you have a battery for the flight one.
Yep.
But for the dash cam, it generally plugs into the electrical system somewhere.
Mm-hmm. On the car.
And so you don't need a battery.
Right. It just is on when your car is on.
Right. And in some cases, they're on 24/7.
I've got Wi-Fi in mine, so I can stream it to my phone.
Yep.
Rather than needing to take the SD card out. And although I do have an SD card, I have a full SD card reader for my phone. I don't have a micro. I got to get an extra micro SD adapter. So when next time I buy my driveway camera, SD card failed. So now I got to buy a new card for that. I'll get another adapter too.
There you go. But yeah, so there's a lot to it. You just have to, as with anything, you know, plan ahead.
Mm-hmm. Do your homework and the research. Just don't go grabbing the very first one that you see because, oh, it's on a good a sale.
Right.
You know.
Do your planning first.
Do your research second.
And then your buying third.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Microsoft. Here's our Microsoft news of the week. Microsoft is warning of an issue.
Again.
When using a media support to install Windows 11 version 24H2 that causes the operating system to not accept further security updates. The problem occurs when using CD or USB flash drives to install Windows 11 version with security updates released between October 8th and October 12th. When using media to install Windows 11 version 24H2, the device might remain in a state where it cannot accept further Windows security updates, Microsoft is warning. This occurs only when the media are created to include the October 2024 or November 2024 security updates as part of the installation. The bug does not have an impact on security updates applied via Windows Update or the Microsoft Update Catalog website and does not occur when the latest December 2024 security update is used. So if you're going to install Windows 24H2 from CD or USB, make sure you have the December 2024 security update. Microsoft has rolled out a fix for a known issue that caused random product deactivated errors for customers using Microsoft 365 Office apps. This is annoying beyond belief. People using Office 365, which is Office on the web, which is where Microsoft wants everybody to go, and they were randomly getting product deactivated errors.
Well, that's not good. And Office 365 can also mean the desktop versions with the web subscription.
Right.
Microsoft doesn't make it easy. Too many things with the same name.
Right. User reports on Microsoft community website, Reddit, and other online platforms show that affected users receive product deactivated warnings in Office apps. As the company explained when it acknowledged the bug on Thursday, the errors are triggered by license changes initiated by administrators. Over the weekend, Microsoft said the bug caused these deactivation warnings has now been addressed. The engineering team has deployed a patch on the service side to resolve unexpected product deactivations, the company stated in an updated support document. And let's not forget that Windows 10 dies on October 14th, 2025. You should be planning what to do right now. So how's your Windows installation running? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Microsoft. Again, Microsoft is just a leviathan. It's an enormous piece of code. Multiple people are working on it, and they don't coordinate well.
Their left hand can't even see their right hand.
Right. There are a million people working on Linux, but all of them pass through very, very, very rigorous QA and vetting as to, is this going to work with the other pieces? Does this look like the other pieces? And is this going to cause a problem with the other pieces? Clearly, Microsoft doesn't have quite that level of QA, quality assurance. We see that over and over and over and over and over and over. and over and over yep. again. And you know, there's a fix for that. I mean, Linux has figured it out. Apple is just as huge a product as Microsoft, and it works better. I won't say 100%. Not even Linux works 100%, but it works better. And it passes through, you know, Linux, for example, passes through 100,000 eyes, passes by 100,000 eyes before it gets okayed to be published. Apple clearly has a good QA section, however many people it has, I don't know, but they do a very good job of that. Microsoft doesn't seem to do as good a job. And yes, we've said this before. A lot of it is not Microsoft's fault. Okay, every single Windows installation is unique. And I mean that exactly. There are no two Windows installations that are identical. I don't care who or what or where you are. Mm-hmm. Back when I was at RIT, we would give every faculty member an identical laptop with identical software from the same image. And by day two, they were all different computers.
Mm-hmm.
Day one, they were all the same.
Sometimes you buy 10 computers from Dell that with the same specs, but inside they're different revisions of different things.
And yep. the other thing, too, though, is Microsoft doesn't care. I mean, they've got you as testers. Exactly when they throw right. stuff out, they figure the odds are in their favor because, yeah, it should work for at least 50% of it. So we're doing good.
Yep.
Yeah, so what if the other 50% have problems with it? We'll figure that out maybe in a couple of months with an update.
Right, right. Acceptable collateral damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're fine. The only thing they're worried about is their shareholders.
Right.
And, how much more money can they get with them or come up with other innovative ideas that can make more money?
Well, you say innovative.
That's the whole problem. They haven't been able to
I
yet.
I say strong-arm tactics, but that's a separate issue.
No,
separate
it's
issue.
True. Yeah, no, it's...
You know, they're killing Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because Windows 10 is terrible? No, Windows 10 is actually pretty doggone good.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
It's had 5 years to mature.
Right.
When it came out, it was horrible.
Well, right. But right now, it's pretty good. And that's the problem. People want to keep it. Microsoft doesn't make money if you keep it. So they need you to move to Windows 11, and eventually they want you to move to a subscription model. They've been saying that to their investors for 3 years. They better mean it, or the investors are going to get really angry. Apple does it differently. Apple brings out new hardware, and the old software doesn't work on the new hardware. But they've done that since day one, the day they got off of off of Motorola.
Mm-hmm.
And went to Intel. They basically went to all their users and said, sorry.
This is the way it is.
There was a compatibility layer that worked for most programs.
Some. But the point is, they essentially, you know, they rolled up their sleeves and said, this is it. We're moving to this new model. The old model doesn't work. Get over yourself. Mm-hmm. And they've done that several times.
Now the latest one is Apple Intelligence.
Right.
You have to have an M series, basically, to get that.
Right. You have to have the M series and not necessarily the M1 or 2, right?
In the desktops, yes. In the phones, no.
Right. So if you have an M1 or M2 phone, you do not get Apple Intelligence.
You have to have a 15 Pro or later.
Or later.
Yeah.
To get Apple Intelligence.
Not even the regular 15 from last year, the 15 Pro.
Right. Gemini.
And then Microsoft has their Copilot.
Right. And for example, I cannot use Gemini. I have a Pro 7. And Gemini works on the 8 series and above. So the 8 and 9s. Sadly, and a couple of Samsung S24s.
Mm-hmm.
The Z Flip 6 and Fold Z, the Pixel 9 Pro Fold.
So right now, you shouldn't upgrade your phone to use the latest AI features. But in the next couple of years, they'll probably be getting more powerful and more useful. So right. by the next phone you do buy, you'll have all this great stuff.
So it depends on what you want to use it for.
Yeah.
Right? If you're a researcher and you're looking into AI, absolutely spend the money. That's what it's for. Mm-hmm. Get your little research grant and go. But, you know, for the average user, honestly, they would be hard-pressed to say what they want AI for. And it doesn't mean that it isn't useful. They just don't know what to use it for.
Yep.
You know, most people don't use 90% of their phone. They just send texts. They make phone calls. They take a few pictures. That's it. You know, they don't use, they use a couple of apps. They don't use the power of the phone. So adding more power to the phone isn't really going to do them a lot of good. The same is true on the Apple side. I'm sorry, but most people don't need the latest, newest, greatest, wonderful Apple phone.
Yep.
And you don't need the necessarily the latest, greatest, newest, wonderful Google phone. And so that's a thing that people have to be aware of. They you know, what you want and what you can afford and what you need are three different things. You know, I basically make phone calls and text messages and take some pictures that I share with people. That's it. I don't need fancy dancy. I use a few apps. I do a bit of surfing, but you know, my Pixel 7 Pro does that magnificently. My wife has a Pixel 3. She doesn't, and I've got a Pixel 5 sitting there waiting for her.
You're a horrible husband. A 3?
I've got a 5 waiting for her. She does not want to change. 3 does everything she needs. What does she want to change to the 5 for?
Nope.
You don't want to go there.
And you know, the correct answer is yes, dear, you're right. That is the correct answer always. All right. That's it. That's it. We are done for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. And we're delighted to have you all along for the ride. Please vote in the poll, particularly those of you who are listening to us via the archives.
The last show of the year.
This is the last show of the year. We are done with 2024. And 2025 is about to show up, and we will see you in next year in just 166 hours.